Welcome to the What's Percolating teleconference, discussing the latest in heartfelt mind, body, and spirit for peace, passion, and prosperity. Now here are your hosts, Gary Kobat and Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
On a beautiful day in Southern California, it's Gary Kobat.
And on a beautiful day, turning sort of snowy later, I guess, it's Elizabeth Hamilton Garino from Maine. How are you, Gary?
Oh, God, we're awesome. Thank you. You know what? We were just going to chat a little bit about, it's just turning winter here, you know, 60 degrees, kind of a little drizzle once in a while. And I was like, no, don't say that, because where everybody else is in the U.S. Oh, I'm so sorry. But it'll be over soon, and, you know, any moment's your moment.
Like 50 days away or a quick airplane flight somewhere else. So, no, it's all good. But, you know, it's funny here in Maine because it's pretty blue sky and sunny, and you'd never know a snowstorm was going to hit. So, whatever, it's all good. What a great conference, huh? We're having fun so far.
Amazing. It's so in-depth. It's just like you want to save the replays and the downloads and just start creating your library, because that session with Dr. Paul was amazing, and I can't wait to re-listen and re-listen and share it with my clients.
Yeah, absolutely. And people can go to besteveryou.com/teleconference to register or share the shows or listen on free replays, whatever you want to do. We've got that website open, and people are using it. We're so glad you're joining us today. And it's going to be, how long are we? We're the 4th through the 7th with 5 speakers per day.
Absolutely. It's a marathon, but we're ready.
Yep.
And we hope you are, too. And what an exciting time now. So tell us, who do we've got right now?
We've got Don Miguel Ruiz, Jr., and he's on Twitter at D. Miguel Ruiz, Jr. Let me spell that. It's DMIGUELRUIZJR.com, and his website is MiguelRuizJr.com. And I'm so excited to bring him on. He's been on Blog Talk Radio with me before on the Best Ever You Show. He and his father were with us, and that was such a joy. And one of the highlights of Best Ever You so far was having them on, and that was just a really special show to have him and his dad here. His father is the author of The Four Agreements, and he's written several books, and we're going to talk to him about those. And you want to just welcome him, and I'll be quiet. It's all good. How are you today, Don Miguel Ruiz?
I'm doing well, so well. Thank you so much, Elizabeth and Gary. Thank you so much for the wonderful opportunity to play with you guys this morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So awesome. Oh, my gosh. You just come from such depth of just your family's history. I mean, I just don't even know where to start. But, I mean, tell us about it. Just what's it like? What's it like growing up with such a depth of culture, the Toltec culture? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, for me, it was a fun experience because I grew up when I was a little kid. My grandmother was the spiritual head of the family, and she used to have a temple in Barrio Logan in San Diego, California. And I grew up with my grandmother being a faith healer and doing her sessions and also her lectures. And it was wonderful to see her and interact with the community. And at the same time, I also saw my father being a doctor, so I grew up with that juxtaposition of a father who is a medical doctor, almost becoming a neurosurgeon, and then my grandmother who's a faith healer, and my uncles are doctors as well. So growing up in this environment, it was basically a combination of two worlds continuously, is that the spirituality of my family as well as the academics of school and my father's approach to science and things like that, and you always had to balance them and be able to give scrutiny to both. But what was really magical was just, it was my grandmother, it was my father, it was my grandpa, too, who was really engaged in it when he was, before his passing in 1990. It was a child growing up with grandmas and grandpas and stories, and the stories of our family, the stories of my great-grandfather, Don Ezequiel, the story of Don Leonardo. And that's basically how an oral tradition as passed down. You know, an oral tradition is basically one generation sharing the stories of our ancestors to another generation and doing it the best they can in a way that's relevant in that person's life.
And timeless, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the key. It's like you adapt the story to the environment you're in that the person can understand, but at the same time maintaining the essence of the lesson. And that's something when my father started really teaching and he let go of practicing medicine, he approached the stories in the way he grew up, and then he realized that people were becoming fanatical and superstitious, so he began to change it. And he began to teach the tradition without the symbols, but with the meaning. And so he was teaching the meaning, he was giving the definitions in a way that what we know as common sense, and I believe that's what has given my father such success in what he does, is he writes in a language that's almost universal that we can relate to. And that really was an experience growing up, watching my father process that, and process it in his own life, process it in his teachings. And because I remember being the oldest of the three boys, I remember the man before he decided to start teaching, the man who was a medical doctor. I remember the man who started the process. And I remember the man who eventually became Don Miguel Ruiz. And you get to watch it, because when I had my memories, my grandmother was already my grandmother, meaning by that she's already full in gear sharing this tradition to the community, that eventually, you know, San Diego, California, inducted her into the San Diego Women's Hall of Fame for continuing this tradition. The county recognized what she did. And in contrast to what her father and her grandfather, they weren't able to share it because it was still taboo to share the tradition outside of their own family. My grandmother just had this fire to share it. So you can say that what me and my father and my brother Don Jose, we're continuing to feed that fire that my grandmother started, or you can almost say exposed, and began to share it beyond the limitations of a family. So for me, that was exciting. As a child growing up through it, that was exciting. And at the same time, I rebelled against it.
rebelled against
you're
it.
Coming out. Enough already.
It's like, yeah, all right, now let's get to the truth. All right.
Well, yeah, I used to be a little goth kid and totally into my academics and totally into that. And then once I graduated from college, because up to that point, when you're a teenager, even though your grandmother is teaching you, you're part of this apprenticeship, you still see it the way you look at a textbook. You know, what does that have to do with me? It's history, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really come into play in my life until the burst of the bubble happened after graduation from college, when you're exposed to life, when all of a sudden the choices we make are really impacting our life. Because up to that point, you can make choices, but there's always that, you know, that bubble that the family protects you from. And then you graduate from college, you go out there for work, you start going into relationships, you start experiencing the ups and downs of the repercussions and the consequences of the actions we take, and the ups of the highs and the lows of the breakups, of something not working out, and all of a sudden the dream crashes around you, or you're rebuilding it, and all of a sudden the tradition becomes alive. Instead of being something that was, you know, forced or something that is set in stone, it becomes something relevant as it allows me to inform my choices. It allows me to see that as I'm living life, this tradition gives me a choice by which I can take an action, and that's when it becomes an instrument. And it's something that life experienced it, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious, do you feel grandmother in there now? Do you feel your dad in you? I mean, how does it come out, or do you not?
Well, yeah, I feel them. Of course I feel both my grandmother and my father, because they taught me so much, and I could be like a little parakeet repeating everything they said verbatim, but then there's no essence to the lesson.
Exactly.
What I'm sharing is what they've taught me and how I processed and then how I changed it, you know, how I adapted to reflect my own life and how I understood it from trials and errors. Like, for example, I when I was younger, before a book even came out, I used to be interviewed, you know, which is quite, oh, something strange. I used to get interviewed without having a book or even teaching. People would ask me to have an interview. All right, I'll do it. And they'd ask me which of the four agreements is the hardest. And I used to answer being impeccable with the word or not taking things personal. Those were always often the two. And then eventually, with time and practice, I realized that the reason why that was hard is because I was domesticating myself to those. You know, the domestication is that system of reward and punishment that if you live up to the expectation, the reward is acceptance. Since we're emotional beings, that feels like love. Thus, if we don't live up to that expectation, if we don't reach that altar or whatever we standard, we are worthy of the punishment, which is self-rejection, the opposite of love. So you can say that unbeknownst to me or automatically, I started distorting the four agreements and making them into the four conditions of my personal freedom. I use them to domesticate myself. You know, if I don't live up to these four agreements, how can I call myself Don Miguel Ruiz Jr.? How can I live up to it? And that's when I realized that when you grab domestication, you're basically introducing conditional love into your life. And it took me a while to realize that. So the way I learned how to approach it is like any alcoholic or drug addict that becomes aware of the truth and that moment of clarity. Well, then I saw a moment of clarity and I accepted the truth. I do take things personal. I do make assumptions. Sometimes I'm not impeccable with my word, and sometimes I don't do my best. Just ask my wife. And basically, it's just those
the direct
things
line.
That,
maybe
yeah.
I'm going to get the
and the nice thing about it is that when you accept the truth, you're no longer pretending to be something you're not. Like, how can I change the world if I'm pretending to be something I'm not? Because we're investing all this energy trying to live up to this image that doesn't exist. So I became aware of that, and that's the reason why it was so difficult. It was easy to say, not taking things personal or not being impeccable with the word was difficult because I was trying to live up to an expectation rather than seeing this as an instrument that informs my choices in a moment of, well, of moment of choice, of intent.
Yeah, I tried to do that with your dad's book, too. When I read the book, I'm like, okay, I'm going to be impeccable with my word every single moment of the day. I'm like, okay, I don't think that's going to work out so well. But it's a great, what you're saying, it's a really great, like almost like a value system.
Yeah.
It's like a guiding light or a value system or something. I was telling Gary before we went on the air that I would have loved that book when I was about 15. I mean, I love it now, but I would have loved to have had it in my teens as well. And I think I told you that once before, too. Because it's such a good, you know, it's just such a good value system to have.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, depending on where we come from in life, if we're so used to conditional love, then we will distort everything. We can read that book at 15 or 21 or 45, and if we're so used to it, then we're going to use that four agreements to give myself conditional love, but not just to myself, but to the people around me. You can almost see it like, oh, honey, you're not being impeccable with your word. And I'm telling this to my wife. I'm like, honey, you have to be impeccable with the word. And all of a sudden, it becomes, instead of this instrument for transformation, it becomes this instrument for oppression, or an instrument to, and that's, if you can understand that with the four agreements, we can totally understand how other beautiful traditions around the world have been distorted because of that. But when you see it from the point of view of unconditional love, which is to accept the truth when it's presented before us, you know, that moment, like an alcoholic or drug addict that accepts the truth, I am an alcoholic, I am a drug addict, I take things personal, is the moment where we accept the truth, that we're no longer pretending to be something we're not, and we accept this is the person I am. And the beautiful moment from that is that we make a choice. We can either continue to do what we're doing, or we change our mind, and we apply it differently. And that's where all of a sudden, it's like, I love the idea that they're saying it is what it is, mostly because this is the clay I get to work with. Now let's shape it into something I want to transform it to, because I'm alive. I'm this living being that has the potential to change and shift it. So from that point of view, at the age of 15 or 27 or 45 or 68, it becomes this instrument that allows us to inform our choices, and the power not, doesn't lie in the actual agreement of the book, but the power lies in that we, the individual, use our choice and our own intent, our own free will, to make a difference in the world in our own life. We made a decision, and we manifested it.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. So when you mentioned that, and you're alive. So what's the other way of living? Is it not alive? Obviously, you're using it as a metaphor. But how that domestication, maybe explain that just a little bit more, or simplify it for us, for the
newer listeners. Well, in the way that I say it, it's the difference of living a life of awareness, which basically means I'm aware that I'm alive at this very moment. Awareness, I understand it as the communion I have with the environment around me, as well as the communion I have with myself. I am aware of this very moment. I am present, and I allow myself to perceive the information that surrounds me. Because right now I'm perceiving with my nervous system, with my eyes, with my hearing, with my senses, with my emotions, with my thoughts. And when I perceive that, the reason why I'm able to perceive that is because I'm alive at this very moment. I give life to this body. I give life to my mind. And when I say yes, I'm able to manifest something, because I'm going to use this energy that animates this body to manifest it. And when I say no, I'm not going to use this energy to manifest anything. So my yes and my no, also known as intention, becomes something that I control. It's the expression. So to say that at this very moment I am alive is becoming aware that at this very moment there's the opportunity to express this intent in order to manifest something, if I want to.
Yeah.
Because the difference between me and my corpse, because right now the voice that you're hearing comes from a body that's alive, and one day this body will be a corpse, which means there won't be an intent in it. There won't be a force to move it. There won't be a
Beautiful.
Force to make a thought. But the difference between me and my corpse is that right now I am here. This
Yeah.
body is alive. And because I am alive, the pure potential of it, that can go in any direction in life, all I have to do is make a choice to say yes to a direction. And in if I apply the levels of attachment, this is level 2 preference, I can go in any direction in life, and all I have to do is say yes, and that's my preference in life. I engage that moment, and when that moment is over, I disengage, I detach, because I never lost sight of who I am. And who I am, you can say the authentic self, is just a name to describe a living energy that manifests and allows to animate a body and a mind. And I am the whole.
I hope people listening replay what you just said so many times. It brings tears to me. I'm like almost choking up here, like trying to talk. And you mentioned your book, The 5 Levels of Attachment. You just talked about the second one. And then you have another book, Living a Life of Awareness. Do you have other books, or are those the 2 so far?
Well, right now there's a third one being written in my computer. So that one, there's no title yet for it. It'll come out next year. But I'm in the process of working on it. But right now those are the 2 I have, yes.
Would you take a run through the 5 Levels of Attachment with us? Do we have time for
sure.
you to do something like that? Because I love that book. I've got it right here. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, thank you. That's appreciated. Thanks. Sure. Just quickly, the 5 levels of attachment is level 1, the authentic self, level 2, preference, level 3, identity, level 4, internalization, and level 5, fanaticism. Now, to describe them, Let's use the example of awareness and the question that my grandmother asked me, do you control knowledge, or does knowledge control you? Imagine awareness like a flower, that awareness of me being alive, that I am this intent and that I'm manifesting life. At level 1, that flower is completely open because I am this living being that can go in any direction. I'm alive. So the answer to my grandmother's question, do you control knowledge, or does knowledge control you? The answer was, it doesn't matter what belief I have or any idea, I am a living being regardless of anything I think or anything I believe. I am alive at this very moment, and that's the authentic self. So basically, this flower is completely open ready to engage life. So at level two, preference, imagine that flower closing just a little bit as it engages a moment in life. And when the moment is over, that flower opens up again, a pulsating flower that engages with every moment of life. You can say an attachment is when I invest something of myself to make something that's not a part of me a part of me. I can invest myself emotionally, psychologically, or academically, or whatever. I invest something to make a part of me, which is basically I engage something. The thing that allows me to detach when the moment is over is that I never lose sight of who I am, meaning I never lose sight that this thing I'm engaging is not a part of me, but I'm actively interacting with it, which allows me to separate because I never lose sight. Thus, the answer to my grandmother's question is, I use knowledge as an instrument by which I navigate the world, by which I function in the world, because I never lose sight of who I am. So you can imagine this flower of awareness opening and closing, pulsating, you can say, with every moment of life, because for as long as I've lived, I'm constantly interacting with life in many forms, from my family to my work to the people I love, to my best friends, to traveling to the airport, to there's so much, even a football game or a baseball game. There's something that I attach to, and right now I'm engaged in this conversation, and when the moment is over, I'm going to detach. At level three, however, identity, imagine that flower closing a little more, but when the moment is over, the flower does not open because I've attached myself and I've used an identity in order to continue to engage that moment even when I'm not engaging it. An identity is basically a symbol that allows me to understand who I am. It's an empty symbol whose definition is completely subject to my own agreement. So I engage a moment. I can say I go to a soccer game, and at level two, when the game ends, the investment I have on the team ends when the game is over, so I detach. But at level three, when the game is over, I stand up, and I have the jersey. I have the shield on my body, and it's part of my identity. I am this fan of this soccer team, the Sounders of Seattle or LA Galaxy or FC Barcelona. And even if the team wins, yay for me, for a whole week, we win. If the team loses, for a whole week, it starts affecting my relationship. But it doesn't affect my relationships in the sense that you have to be a soccer fan in order to be my friend. You don't have to like soccer. What matters most is the friendship you and I have, which is true throughout level 1, 2, and 3. The relationship I have with you is the bond between you and I, and it has nothing to do with my preference in life or how I identify myself, because the only difference is that I've decided to give myself a name. So the answer to my grandmother's question is, I use knowledge to give me my sense of self, a definition of who I am. And that's, you can say, the attachment we have to knowledge at that point. Knowledge and I are one. At level four, though, preference, that flower closes even more without the capacity to open willingly as it once did. It doesn't pulsate anymore. It requires a lot of work to be able to open. And that's the work that every one of us does in our, you know, in our therapy or our work or our sessions. So whatever it is that we do to look for our own happiness, I guess. You can say that at level four, internalization, I use knowledge to give me my sense, my rules by which I live my life, especially the rules by which I accept myself. You can say that I can grab this identity and I'm going to domesticate myself based on that identity. What is to be a good soccer fan, or what is to be a good Toltec? You know, and that's, you can say this is where I start distorting the four agreements, that I read this four agreements and now in order to accept myself, I have to live up to it. So you can say that big difference at level four is domestication, or you can say conditional love, where the reward for living up to the expectation is my own acceptance, and my punishment for not living up to it is my own self-rejection. And not just my self-rejection, but the rejection of others, because I can't give what I do not have.
Exactly.
Which means when I love myself conditionally, then I'm going to love everyone else around me conditionally. The only way I accept you is if you live up to this expectation. This is where if you want to be my friend, you have to like soccer. And if you don't like soccer, well, you don't know what you're missing.
Yeah.
Or you can say, if you want to be my friend, you have to live up to the four agreements. Oh, you're not being impeccable with the word. Oh, I only hang out with people who are impeccable with the word. Then all of a sudden we start using these instruments for transformation as instruments to domesticate other people around us, including ourselves. Because if they live up to the expectation, like I said before, they're worthy of our acceptance. Now, the difference between level 4 and level 5, which is fanaticism, when that flower completely closes, is that just like in level 4, where acceptance is the reward, that love is the reward, conditional love, of course, the punishment is not just self-rejection in the form of self-judgment, but hate, anger, prejudice. You can say that the opposite of love is not anger or those things. The opposite of love is love. More put it in more simple ways, the opposite of unconditional love is conditional love. Though we still call it love, but it has morphed. And that's, we can say, the consequence of the gradual increment of the attachment we have to something. You can say that the more we attach ourselves to something, the increment, is the more we distort our perception. Because at level 4 and 5, knowledge completely is distorted, especially at level 5, where we distort everything in order to fit our perception, and that's because of conditional love. When we have conditional love for ourselves, then we have conditional love for life. Life has to fit our perception in a level 5, fanaticism. Life, everything, has to fit our perception. Otherwise, it's not part of my world. And when that increment happens to the point where an idea is more important than my own life, you can say that's when the side of humanity disappears. My awareness of humanity disappears because instead of seeing myself as a living being, I am the personification of an idea. And same thing with other people. It's easy to hate or discriminate others when we don't see a humanity, we see a symbol. And when that happens, it's easy to kill someone because we're not killing a human being, we're killing the representation of a symbol that we do not agree with. And in soccer, you can say, or in football and sports, it's easy to recognize the opposite team by the jerseys. But in politics and religion, it's about a different thing. We don't see that humanity of an individual who has found a way to love God or divinity. We find an idea that we don't agree with. And when that happens, it's easy to discriminate. It's easy to hate. It's easy to kill. So you can say that at that moment, this attachment to an idea, to knowledge, basically get to the point where that idea is more important than human life. And that's where everything gets distorted. So you can say that flower is completely closed now. Awareness is completely closed. The thing is that we're always the authentic self. Even when we're at level 5, we're always authentic self because we are alive. We're just not aware of it.
Exactly.
Awesome. What happens to peace?
You can say at 4 and 5, peace is when someone has imposed their will on someone and that other someone has subjugated themselves completely. Someone won. So you can say that the whole relationship in humanity is engaging, imposing, and subjugation. When you have engagement, you have authentic peace, which means I respect your no. Your no is just as powerful as your yes. And the capacity to have that is because I respect my own no. My own no is just as powerful as my yes. And when I have respect for my own no, my own yes, otherwise known as my intent, then I have the capacity to respect yours. Because the only thing that is going to exist between you and I are the things that you and I mutually say yes to. The things that if you say no to something, that's not going to be part of our relationship. In fact, this relationship only exists for as long as you and I say yes to it. But if you say no to something, that's not part of it. An example, if we go outside the buildings we are in and we go to the street and we look around, the buildings we will see are the buildings this community or your community said yes to. What you do not see are the buildings that the community you live in said no to. Somewhere along the line, there was a no powerful enough to stop the manifestation of something being constructed. And the reason why is because each one of us, 7 billion human living beings, have the potential of living life in free will. And when we both say, when we all say yes to something, we can manifest with intent. And when we say no, we're not going to use this energy to manifest anything together. So as a society, we create based on our agreements and our disagreements. An agreement, of course, is the action of saying yes, and a disagreement is the action of saying no. So you can say when we have that mutual respect for one another, we have the capacity to build with harmony, which is peace. But eventually you'll say no to something I want you to say yes to. I respect everything you can, you, and I'm going to give all these arguments, all these examples, even graphs and charts to explain what I'm envisioning, but nothing's going to happen unless you say yes and you say no. If I become so attached, then the first line of disrespect is coming. And that line of disrespect is, I want that yes. Instead of that no, I want that yes. And the best way to control your intent is to make you doubt yourself. This is when I impose my will onto you. And that control only happens if you subjugate yourself, otherwise known as you give me permission to control you. And the best way to do that is to make you doubt yourself. Now, mind you, I'm using the most simplest way, an example that I usually give my classes, for example. Imagine me at the age of 8. I'm learning how to assert myself, which is basically I'm learning how to say no and yes. I'm learning how to live my life, and my grandmother wants to give me food, a soup, a bowl of soup. And I'm going, no, I don't want it, no. And she tries to tell me it's good for me, that I'll grow big and strong like Popeye, and I go, no. As a parent, I totally know what it feels like to reach that level of temptation because I have kids of my own, and I totally want them to eat. So my grandmother, that line of temptation, she goes, honey, do you know how many children out there don't have anything to eat? Those kids in Mexico and Africa and Asia and the United States, there's many people who don't have anything to eat, and here you are wasting food. It's a sin to waste food, she says, since I don't want to look like a selfish child or a sinner in the eyes of my grandmother. I say, yes, Grandma, and I continue, and I finish the bowl of soup. And when I finish, my grandmother goes, yes, honey, that's a good boy. And she makes me do what she wanted me to do. And then fast forward 30 years later, I'm at a restaurant where they serve you those big, big plates. And halfway through the plate, my body tells me the truth. I am full. My body is telling me the truth. But then consciously or subconsciously, I hear a voice saying, it's a sin to waste food. And consciously or subconsciously, I go, yes, Grandma. And I finish the plate. I've totally gone against myself because the idea was much stronger than the reality that my body was telling me. And I totally went against myself because of an idea. You can say that my grandmother domesticated me that one time. But because we're human beings with the capacity to listen to our own thoughts, with a mind that's able to give us information, we continue to domesticate ourselves. This is an example of how we control the intent of another individual, also known as domestication. We control 7 billion people by making them think that they don't have, their intent is not as good, and they should give power to someone else to make choices for them. So you can say this example is the most innocent form, and if you go up the levels of attachment to level 5, well, you can find the most darkest, horrible aspects of that line of disrespect. And all of a sudden, in that moment, from the point of view of level 5, peace is basically domesticating someone else and controlling their intent so thoroughly that they put no resistance. But then, of course, that explains the world we live in a battle of control. Who is going to domesticate who? When people argue about their sports teams to religion and politics and whatever, is a battle to convert the other one rather than listening to one another. Because that's what the difference is.
Mm-hmm.
When we listen to one another, when we have mutual respect for one another,
yeah,
we can listen to opposing views and listen to what they're saying, understanding what they're saying, and say no, but still respecting what they're saying, which becomes a more of a conversation to let inspiration grow. Well, I don't like this one, but what about this? Well, I can see how that works. Well, let's add this. Well, and then you build, slowly build up to something that's incredible. So in what you could say that peace, from that point of view, is letting inspiration expand, while the other one is letting inspiration die.
We have a caller.
Mm-hmm.
We have a call. We have lots of callers, but we have a caller who would like to ask you a question about courage.
Sure.
Would you like? Okay, hang on just a minute here. Let me unmute the line. Deborah Oakland.
Hi.
Hi, Deborah. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Hi, Abigail. It's great listening to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for tuning in and making a phone call. Thank you.
Oh, it's wonderful. I have one question.
Yeah.
What does courage mean to you, and how has it influenced your life?
Okay, sure, no problem.
Thank you.
Well, the best way to describe courage is to see what the gift courage gives to us. And the courage, the gift that courage gives us is the ability to manifest our dreams. That's the beautiful gift that courage has. You see, courage is basically that expression of confidence in ourselves that if you look at it in your yes and your no, that when you say yes, you're going to manifest something. You're going to use your body and your mind to manifest something, because when you say, here's the thing, in your mind you can think of all these potential possibilities in the world. We call that imagination or inspiration. We can think of all these possibilities, and if we like one of them, we can use our body to manifest it. You see, the same energy that is required for us to move an arm, to move a leg, to move this body, is the same energy that's required to make a thought. And a thought exists for as long as you believe in it. So courage is basically believing in your own intent and manifesting it. Not letting our own self-rejection stops us from manifesting it. And you can see that's the point where if we look at it from the point of view I just described to you, that whole engagement or interaction of imposing subjugation and engagement, someone is going to try and convince you that your intent is not strong enough. To make you say, no, you're right, I have no idea what I'm doing, please think for me. And you can do that by making you doubt yourself or have fear of yourself. So courage from that point of view, it's basically saying, I free myself. You know, like Bob Marley said, emancipate yourself from mental illness, slavery. No, none but yourself can free your mind. That's the most powerful sentence in any song I've ever heard. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. And the beautiful thing here is that at that point, when we do free ourselves, the next important question is, am I going to continue conditional love, which means now that I'm free, I'm going to impose you with my belief, or I'm going to engage you with unconditional love and respect. Even though I have freedom, I'm going to respect your dream and I'm going to respect my dream, but no one's going to disrespect me ever again. And that, you can say, is the expression of courage, to believe in yourself, to believe in your own intent, to manifest and ask yourself, are you going to use that intent, that freedom? And to me, freedom is the expression of saying yes and no with a complete free will that we have. Are we going to use it to impose, which is continue conditional love, or express unconditional love, which is the willingness to engage everyone around me with respect?
Yeah, and give them the space to do the same.
Yeah, and that to me is courage. The courage to know that I only control to the tips of my fingers to express life from that point of view, and realize that as I co-create together, that your intent and my intent, that all our intents manifest something. For example, this program right now, all the people. It didn't take just one person to manifest it. It required so many people to say yes, from Gary and Elizabeth to say yes to making it, to the producers, to the sponsors, to me saying yes, to every other interviewing and participants saying yes, to the people who are calling in and listening in, them saying yes. All of us that are here are because we said yes. The people who are not here, the people who said no. But that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of living life surrounded by other free wills, by individuals that we love. We have the capacity to make something wonderful in any given moment, as well as at any given moment we can make the most perfect nightmare. But that's what life is, the whole.
Thank you.
What's it like in your house with your little kiddos? How big are they now?
Oh, they're 8 and 6. And it's interesting. We have two sets of parenting skills, because my eldest son, he's high-functioning autistic. So there's certain ways we adapt to our son. And then our little girl, who is not in the spectrum, but she's still a 6-year-old dealing with first grade and dealing with the politics of the schoolyard. That's something my son cares nothing about, but my little girl does. So we're engaging them, you know, the whole action of action-reaction, of teaching them consequences of their themselves, you know. And then my wife and I grew up from different backgrounds. Like, if we put it from the point of view of cultural, my wife grew up Mormon and Jewish, and I grew up Catholic, and even Toltec is not a religion. I grew up with spirituality. So we grew up with different forms of perception, as well as culturally, German and English, Spanish and Mexican, to create an American family. And the way we manage it, and me and my wife have managed it, is that even though we're about to celebrate our 10 years together, it took a lot of hard work to get to a point where we truly listen to one another. And what allows it to happen is the willingness to say we want to be in this relationship. And we learned the art of arguing, which there is an art. And for me, and there's a personal art, basically it's like I know when I'm about to put my foot in my mouth, I shut up and I walk away. And it took a while for my wife to realize that when I walk away, that I'm actually caught myself before I say something stupid, and I'm going away so I can detach or like let go of that energy so I can have reason again. And it took her a long time to let me do that, because before I would walk away and she'd follow me, not letting me unwind or
disengage.
Disengage, yeah. And the same thing with her. And eventually the art is learning how to disengage from those triggers that are not going to allow us to listen to one another. Because when we stop listening, that's when we start raising our voices, because we want to be heard. But when we raise our voices, the other person shuts off. So we learn to recognize in ourselves when we are doing it, and I can't point out to her when she's doing it, because as soon as I point out, oh, honey, you're doing it again, oh, that's not good.
Or
she's doing it to me.
You know,
the perception the person will have that's a weapon. But the ability that we've developed to listen to one another, that's the key, because when we listen to one another, and mind you, like, we've had arguments, like in the past week we had one conversation that began to escalate to an argument, and then we both went silent for about a few minutes, and the first time, and then we started talking again, and we talked for about 2 hours, and at the end of the 2 hours we actually had a solution. Something that 5 years ago, 7 years ago, would have been a spectacular fight or argument. It now turns into like we know that we're not going to, what we're talking about is important. That's the key. What we're talking about is important to one another, and we've found a way to disengage those triggers of not allowing each other to listen to one another.
Mm-hmm. Space and to be.
Yeah, so from there, you can say that that's where we're going from there, and we're continuing to explore it. You know, ask us in 10 years where we're at, and we'll let you know if we've gone beyond that point that we retrograde. But the key is that there's no such thing as a cookie-cutter relationship, whether with my wife or my kids, because what makes every relationship unique is that the individuals are unique. I am the constant in every relationship I have, yet every relationship is unique to that individual. My relationship with my wife is different from my relationship to my kids, as well as my father, my mother, my brothers, my best friends, my close friends, my ex-girlfriends, my other collegiates. It's different because my relationship is different, because I'm a different person. Yet, at the same time, I'm this individual that has the capacity to evolve, to change, to move, to learn. And when that happens, that allows me to be honest in the most important relationship that there is, which is with myself. Because since I'm in a relationship with myself and I'm the constant relationship with everyone, if I love myself conditionally, then every relationship will always be in conditional love. But if I love myself unconditionally, then there's potential for every relationship to be, there's an opportunity for every one of those relationships to also be an unconditional love. And that matters because the other person can choose to love me conditionally or unconditionally. But from that point of view, from how I see the world, that's looking at the world through the eyes of love. Meaning, do I love it conditionally or unconditionally? In one, with conditional love, I will love people only by the image I project onto them and they live up to that image. While as unconditional love, I will see that individual for who they are, the person that they are. And when I'm able to listen to them, I can adapt and engage them for who they are, because I'm doing that to myself. And that allows the opportunity to be in harmony.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that's why, let me ask you this. Do you think that's why relationships fail?
Well,
or whatever
relationships,
they do?
Relationships can fail even when there's unconditional love. You see, whether it's conditional or unconditional love, you can say that in life, every relationship will have its lifespan. Just like the living beings, we have a lifespan. A relationship has a lifespan because we're talking about individuals that have free will and that can go in different directions. So you can say that a relationship can be in complete, perfect harmony, but if the individual is growing in a totally different direction, then the relationship may not survive. Now, I'm going to use an example of my own because it's happened to me. I fell in love when I was in college and my freshman year of college, and she and I were in relationship for about 2 years. And we loved each other. Then we went to one of my dad's workshops about love in couple relationship. And she and I broke up in the first break. You know, it's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. On the first break of the Friday night, she and I looked at each other and she says, "Honey, we've got to talk." And I'm like, "Honey, there's no need to talk. It's the truth. It's over." And we were sad and we worked it out, but we broke up. And then fast forward 25 years, because that's how long we've been, 20 years later, she and her husband are good friends with me and my wife, and our kids play. What happened is that the relationship romantically didn't succeed because we didn't love each other romantically, yet we loved each other. We loved each other. When we let go of the relationship, we allowed the opportunity for the other one to grow in their own unique way because we were going in different directions. But because we gave ourselves the opportunity, she went in her life. We became roommates. We lived in the same house after college, and I moved to Berkeley. We lived in the same house, and she was dating and I was dating, but we saw each other more like brothers and sisters. She would call me her brother from a different mother, and I would add and father. And we had that relationship. So when she met her husband, you know, at first he's not used to that. And then after a while, we became good friends. So at the wedding, I was staying at the husband as the husband's family's home, and they took me in as one of their own. As like they saw me like Sharon's brother, and it was so cool because I sat at the wedding. I was sitting on both sides. I was friends with both the husband and the wife, and then now our kids play. And actually, they're about to move up here, which is cool. And you know, they came to visit us. They liked the neighborhood, and they're like, we're gonna move to the area. The example that I used there is that you can say it's from the point of view of romantic relationship, it failed simply because we're two individuals who were going in different directions, but the relationship was a complete success because we allowed ourselves the respect that I want you in my life, but I'm going to be honest with myself, I may not want you in my life romantically because I don't see you in that way anymore, yet I love you. And we gave ourselves the opportunity to grow, to evolve. And you can say that we've been together for 20 years. But at the same time, we haven't. Now, if we see it from that point of view, a relationship will exist for as long as two people say yes to. For as long as that there's that respect, that relationship can last 2 years romantically, like me and my ex-girlfriend did, or it could last a lifetime. You can say yes to one another until the day both of you pass away in your late 90s. The beautiful thing there is that there is respect. Now, mind you, the opposite of that, when you have conditional love, you can be in a relationship to your 90, but there's no respect. You might say, yes, we're successful. We're together for over 50 years. But when there's no respect, yes, you survived, you've got the status of 50 years, but were you happy? Were you in love? Were you attached so much to a document that says you have to, and the relationship deteriorated that you have Christmas together and you're not even talking to one another. You can go out to dinner and no one talks to one another because you're going through the motions of living up to an expectation of what it is to be a husband and wife. And that, from that point of view, can you ask yourself, yes, they're together for 50 years, but did it succeed? So
the
if
idea.
You see it from
what a great
if
point.
You see it, yeah, if
Amen.
You see it, yeah, if you see it from those points of view, then you ask yourself which relationship you want: the relationship that lives up to an expectation, or a relationship that's the truth because the person in front of you is saying yes to you. Why waste our time with someone who doesn't want to be with us? Why waste our time with someone who doesn't accept us for who we are? Especially, why waste our time with someone who is trying to continuously impose their will upon me if that's not what I want?
Amen.
When we are with someone who says yes to us with complete freedom to say yes, man, that relationship is alive. So for me, I can tell you with honesty, in my life, I have two relationships that are a complete success up to this point. My one with my ex-girlfriend at the age of 20, when I sorry, 18, when I was in freshman in college, and the one with my wife. They're both good friends, and they when they come over and visit, those two always go off
wife.
And start talking.
Wife.
And me and Fritz are all there watching the game, hanging out, having beers. And they
so
come
great.
Back and they're from shopping. Like they come back and Sharon has ideas for the house, and my wife says, "Yeah, I like that." And so it's cool. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah,
and the thing
cool.
about it is that, you know, my father has the same thing. Like, when I introduced my wife to my family back when we were dating, we went to dinner, my dad was there, and next to him was my mom. Next to him was my dad's ex-wife, whom I call Mama Gaia, and my dad's current girlfriend, Barbara.
Yeah.
Now, my dad was romantic only with one of them, which is Barbara, and the other two were the moms. And they all hang out. And it's something that I learned. I learned that the key to it, yes, it takes a lot of work. Trust me, it's not easy. Because there's that willingness to heal. Because sometimes there are wounds. And the respect is giving each other the time to let that wound heal. Because if that wound is getting in the way of this potential great relationship, then of course you're going to let someone heal. And that's the key. When I see my father with my mom and my stepmom, whom I called Mama Gaia, I love her very much, and Barbara, is like the friendships is more important than the status.
That's what I've got with my ex-husband. We're just best friends. My husband's good friends with him. And, you know, we're talking right now in email about him coming out here in March and watching my other two kids. And it's so much easier to have peace than disrespect and chaos and things like that. So that's neat.
And the key to this is the willingness of two people saying yes to it. Because if someone is doing it not because they want to, but because they have to, it's not going to work. If someone is not ready for it, if someone is not ready to forgive, then respect is respecting that they are not ready. And we respect their time. That's key. You can't force someone into this kind of a relationship. There has to always be that mutual respect. And, of course, something that starts with ourselves. If I'm not ready to forgive, if I'm not ready to heal, if I'm not ready to let go, I'm going to be honest with myself. And I'm going to do what's best for me, which is I'm not going to be around because it hurts too much. And walking away is also an act of love. Because I am not, just in the same way I walk away from my wife when I'm arguing, I'm about to put my foot in my mouth. I can walk away from a relationship that I know that if I continue, poison will continue to come out and healing will just get pushed back and back and back. But if I walk away now, I can have that healing that when I'm ready to reengage, the healing will be there and poison won't be interfering. And that, I have to say, did happen between me and my ex-girlfriend from college. We had to walk away for about a year or two. And when we came back, oh man, it was incredible.
Beautiful story.
Yep. We need to be mindful of time. I think we could have you on here for 20 hours and just learn.
I think we ran over the endorsement part. We were
We love iCoffee, and we'll come back to them on the next show or whatever. We've got them everywhere. We love iCoffee. Yeah. But,
I want to say thank you to iCoffee for allowing this to happen. So thank you to iCoffee.
Thank you.
You know, in LA,
I love your word respect. Don't you love that word, Gary? Such a great word. Respect, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Space and respect. Namaste, right?
Space.
See what the beautiful light in yourself to see it in somebody else. And respect that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So how do we say thank you to you for being here with us for a full hour and let you go? Because we have to let you go, and I don't want to because you're just such a wealth of wisdom. And we didn't even really talk about living a life of awareness, so I guess we'll have to have you back again.
actually, the whole conversation was about living a life of awareness. Everything I talked about was basically the key of being aware of the most important thing. I am alive, and the relationship I have myself is if I choose to love myself conditionally or unconditionally, at the very moment, that choice allows me to set the precedent for the relationship I have with life. So from that point of view, from that choice that I make, the most basic form is living a life of awareness that I always have a choice. And that's freedom.
Free will. You bet.
Free will. Yep. Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
All right, Gary. I'm gonna keep talking, so I'm going to let Gary take over because I'll keep going.
No, that's okay. In a few days we have Mitch Gaylord, 84 Olympic gold medal winner, and his program's about raising the bar, and I think we just raised the bar. In the last few, in LA here in Hollywood, they're always looking for the wow factor, and that's certainly just happened over the last 55 minutes. Don Miguel, we really appreciate your heart. And you're sincere. You just, it was beautiful, and the messages were so right on. And don't forget, Living a Life of Awareness, feel free to go to his site, and you can order that or place a pre-order. And
you have a radio
Elizabeth.
Show, don't you, also?
Yeah, every Wednesday at noon Pacific, I have a show called The Way of the Desert on the co-creatornetwork.com.
Okay.
It's basically a blog radio. It's like I treat it like a diary or like a journal.
I love
it.
That's yeah, you're beautiful. You're such an eloquent speaker, and I love how you are real. You use your own stories and examples, which, you know, we can all relate to, and I think that's my favorite thing about you. You just are really real with all this wisdom and so forth interjected in. And I want to give a shout-out, too, before we go, to everyone in our chat room who joined us. We have a live chat, Miguel, going while we were talking, and there were so many people talking and interacting in the chat room too. So thank you to everybody there. And just thank you for being with us so much.
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for this great honor, Gary and Elizabeth. Thank you so much. I'll be in Maine actually in March. I'll be
wonderful.
Yeah, I'm going back to Leaping Lizards in Freeport, Maine. I'll be there again.
There.
Yep. I'll be there.
Fun. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to give you a giant big hug then when you're here because I would absolutely love you.
Have fun, and hopefully I get to see some of the snow, and if I don't, oh well.
If you don't, come to Southern Cal and bring your surfboard, and we'll go surfing, you know that.
We'll do. I'm a Southern California boy, so yep, I love surfing.
I love
great.
It. All right, thank
awesome.
You so much.
Thank you so
Take
much.
Care,
everyone. Guys, Gary, thank you so much. Have fun.
Beautiful
enjoy,
day.
Enjoy
total
beautiful
blast.
Los Angeles. Big
awesome.
Hugs.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye. And everybody, you can visit us at besteveru.com/teleconference for more information. What's really neat about this conference, Gary, if we can just run a little bit longer, is
sure.
that all the shows are free replay. So if you listen live, awesome. We love you, and thank you for chatting with us and everything. But you can go back, and you can listen to these on free replay, and every show has social media share buttons, too, so you can share it with your friends or family or coworkers or whatever. So it's a really neat benefit to having done this with Blog Talk Radio. Thank you to everybody at Blog Talk Radio for their support, and thank you also to everybody at iCoffee. Everybody who registers to participate in this conference is registered in a drawing for a free iCoffee, and they're at iCoffee.com. That's my little thing.
And until our next show, everybody have a beautiful day.
Awesome. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the What's Percolating teleconference on Blog Talk Radio. Please visit us at besteveru.com for more ways to percolate and create your best life.